And of course, our guest tonight, Dr. Michael Sala, as we talk about galactic diplomacy on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Michael Sala with us. Michael, first of all, these ETs, I mean, where are they coming from? A certain region out there in the universe, in our galaxy? Where?
Well, it seems that they really come from so many different locations. It's hard to say that they're purely coming from our own galaxy. They seem to be beings that are able to move through different dimensions. Some of the technologies, something that enables them to travel through these dimensional doorways, if you like, kind of like stargates. So there's no real way to say that. Well, they're definitely just from the galaxy, but certainly the ones that I think most people have been reporting in terms of their contact experiences are beings, on these ships that originate from different points within our galaxy, different planets, and I think also within our solar system, that there are ETs that have at the very least bases in our solar system on some of the planets, and that again, if we go into this whole idea of kind of multidimensional realities, that it may be that even on planets like Venus or Mars, that there may be actually flourishing civilizations on these different dimensional layers, as some people are claiming, or some of the contactees are saying anyway.
What about the Vatican? Has there been some approach there?
Well, the Vatican is a really fascinating case now. It's been developing. It was in, for many years, Corrado Balducci.
That's right.
He was someone that was kind of close to the Pope, John Paul II, and he was kind of going around saying a lot of things about extraterrestrials, and that people were intrigued. He had a lot of press in Italy, and he got to go to a lot of conferences in the United States and elsewhere just to kind of like represent what he thought was the reality. And of course, that he wasn't being silenced, people took as tacit admission that the Vatican supported that. Well, in 2008, then things started to kind of really step up, because the chief Vatican astronomer, by the name of Dr. Gabriel Funes, he came out and he said that we could consider extraterrestrials as our brothers, and so and that it was actually acceptable for people, Catholics at the very least, to consider extraterrestrials as a reality, and that they could actually be part of the kind of Christian fellowship. And so this really has opened up a number of different Vatican theologians, especially people within the astronomical community. There's another Jesuit by the name of Dr. Guy Consolmagno, who has been saying...
He's been on the program with us.
Oh, well, there you go. So you know the sort of thing that he's been saying about extraterrestrials, that they could be baptized, that they have a certain ethical position or ethical evolution that makes them open to possibilities of baptism, then he could do it. So it seems that there has been this opening up within the Vatican to the extraterrestrial presence, and there's an incredible book, an amazing set of claims made by two people, Chris Putnam and Tom Horn, that's called Exo Vaticana, and they have really gone deep into the history of the Catholic Church's interest on the extraterrestrial question, and most recently, the case that they focus on a lot is the Fatima case, and that in fact that sighting was not a Marian apparition at all. That in fact the lady that the three children saw was not the Lady Mary, but in fact was an extraterrestrial, a female extraterrestrial. And so their thesis is that in fact the Vatican is now preparing to announce the existence of extraterrestrials, and that they have some really good research backing them. And I think that to a degree I support what they're saying. I don't really support the final conclusion that they've drawn, that that the Vatican is going to make an announcement about extraterrestrials being real, but the Vatican is then going to announce that one of the extraterrestrials will be a savior, and that this will be in fact the Antichrist. I think they're kind of reading into it there, but certainly they've got some good research and make some fine points.
Could the Vatican come out with disclosure even though other governments might protest?
Well, that's really a fascinating question. I mean, that was something I hadn't really considered at all from the time I first was involved in this research. But the last couple of years, I think that there's a very real possibility that the Vatican has the kind of prestige or the influence to move forward on this thing. Because I think of all the institutions that exist, the Vatican is probably the one that has the most to gain by being out there in terms of making this announcement. Because I think there'll be, for governments themselves, there's some pretty risky kind of calculations that goes behind, that goes with making any announcement like that. But I think with the Vatican, they stand to gain the most, because simply the Vatican and Catholicism doesn't seem to be doing very well in Europe at all. I mean, very few people now are practicing Catholics in Europe, and really this, the age of secularism and the information age has really made Catholicism kind of very much kind of like a cultural thing that people honor, for festivities, but it doesn't have much of a place in people's lives anymore. And I think Catholic theologians, and especially the Jesuits, who seem to be the ones that within the Catholic Church who are always most concerned about the long-term survival and future of Catholicism, they see the writing on the wall that if something isn't done soon, that Catholicism will basically become a museum piece in Europe, at least. And so this extraterrestrial issue may be a way to really bring Catholicism back into the center by making it something that, one, discloses the extraterrestrial reality, and two, kind of sees extraterrestrials as these kind of fellow beings in search of some kind of deeper understanding of the significance of the Christian message and the Holy Trinity. And so I think that they really see a possibility here for the Catholic Church, at least in Europe, to rebound with a disclosure. So yeah, I do think it's very possible that they can come forward.
If they do, Michael, what do they do? Apologize for years of past hesitation?
Well, this is the beauty of why the Vatican can do it, because they can justly say that, well, we weren't the ones that were holding this from the population. It was really governments, especially the military-industrial complex, that was the one that was vested in keeping this information secret. They were the ones that were doing these reverse engineering projects and doing all of these technological developments through the private industry, and that they kept it from the public. So the Catholic Church can kind of come forward and their hands are, to a certain extent, they can say, well, we weren't the ones making the decisions on this on these issues. Okay. And so they don't have that much baggage that I think is going to be exposed if they went forward and disclosed this information.
The Vatican has several observatories, Michael. I've always questioned why they have it. I know they're into science, but during the days of Galileo, there's no way they would admit that. What do you think they're there for?
Well, that's interesting. That whole question of the Vatican observatories, of course, you're probably referring to the one at Mount Graham in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I know that you had, as a guest on the show many years ago, Father Malachi Martin.
Yeah, Art did. Yeah,
that's right, with Art Bell, and he made a comment about what was actually observed from the observatory, and that he talked about in a kind of an elliptical way. He talked about something coming into our solar system that the observatory was monitoring, and that essentially he was saying that there's a group of extraterrestrials, or a planet inhabited by extraterrestrials, which is coming into our solar system, and that the Catholic Church sees them as being very important for the survival or for the future of humanity. So I think, in a way, he was referring to what people would say is Nibiru, Zechariah Sitchin's 12th planet, and that this is possibly what the Catholic Church is aware of.
Do you think the Church would come forward, and we've had Tom Horn on and Putnam as well, talking about that theory of Fatima, in that it was indeed an extraterrestrial event. But do you think the Vatican would ever come forward and say, this Fatima story is true? They were ETs, not the Virgin Mary. I'm not sure they'd admit that, Michael. What do you think?
Well, I think they wouldn't do it until they had disclosed the extraterrestrial presence first. I mean, and once they've done that, then they could bring up the Fatima case and kind of revisit it and say, well, you know, based on our current understanding and what we know now about extraterrestrials visiting our world, now we believe that it wasn't a Marian apparition after all, that the girls, you know, the two girls and the boy saw this this extraterrestrial female, and that the sun phenomenon that was seen by thousands of people there in Fatima, that in fact was a UFO. And that could be used as a way to kind of like make it more comfortable for Catholics to embrace this phenomenon, because for Catholics, what happened at Fatima is kind of like you know, a big part of the faith, or at the very least, that it's one of these miracles. The Marian tradition is a very important part of Catholicism, so many Catholics would feel comfortable with an extraterrestrial presence if they were told that, well, in fact, the Fatima incident was extraterrestrials, and that this could actually be something that maybe was reflected during the time of Christ itself or himself.
Why do you think the Vatican could be proactive in this? What's their motive?
Well, I think there's a few agendas here. It's you know, different factions within the Vatican that have been involved in these issues. I think the Jesuit community is one faction that, from what I've been able to discover in my research, wants the truth to come out. That they are kind of much more the kind of intellectual missionaries, or the people that kind of tend to see in the long term in terms of what's the future of and what is going to help the Catholic Church survive. I mean, the Jesuits, for example, were the ones that went out and did a lot of proselytizing in China and in the Americas and so forth. So they saw the remote lands as areas or possibilities for the expansion of the Catholic faith. And so they always embraced that. And so I think it'll be the same with extraterrestrials. And I think the Jesuit community, that they would see these extraterrestrials as kind of like really being an opportunity for the Catholic Church to expand its influence, its mission, to kind of like go to these other worlds, you know, sending Jesuit missionaries or whoever to these other worlds and say, okay, well, you know, this is how you believe the divinity has expressed itself. You know, this is how we believe it happened on Earth. You know, maybe we can have a dialogue in exchange and for mutual outcome. And I think that this would bring about the possibility for the Catholic Church to become relevant again in the lives of many people, if all of a sudden Catholicism could become a bridge between our world and extraterrestrial worlds, because that's what people are really looking for. It's like, because for many people, especially as we talked earlier, the grey aliens, it's hard to kind of like establish a rapport with them. But if you have these human-looking extraterrestrials in other worlds or other civilizations, and that they have a kind of similar belief system in mm-hmm. terms of you know, something we could recognize as in the Christian world as something involving a savior like Christ, then bridges could be built. And this, I think, is something that the Catholic Church would be very interested in.
Can you imagine what those files at the Vatican might look like?
Well, it's important to point out that the Vatican has the world's best intelligence network. They have, I think, what is it, 1.5 billion Catholics, something like that, around the world. Yep. And confession is a big part of the Catholic faith. And they also have been doing this for close to 2,000 years now. So whatever they have in the Vatican catacombs down there, in their libraries, in their archives, they have a lot of information. So they certainly have the information. And it's very interesting that one of the disclosure project witnesses, and actually at the at Stephen Bassett's disclosure press conference,
the citizens' hearing, yeah,
that the citizen hearings, that it was mentioned that the U.S. Congress actually wanted to get access to the Vatican's to the Vatican archive in terms of what do they know about extraterrestrials, and the Vatican declined. Danny Sheehan played the kind of role in trying to get that information from the Vatican to the U.S. Congress, but the Vatican didn't want to share it. So that just in itself tells you how much information they have.
That's pretty dramatic, though, Michael, don't you think, if we ever get that kind of disclosure? How do you think the world would react to that? Are you there? I think we may have lost Michael. Let me see if he's there again. Michael, you there? Nope. Well, we got to get Tommy to get him back in and find out what happened. Maybe he hit a button or something like that, but we'll do our best. And he's on a roll. This is with, of course, Dr. Michael Sala and his latest work. He's got a number of books out there, but his latest one is Galactic Diplomacy, Getting to Yes with E.T., and he is, of course, in Hawaii right now, and he's been there. He's not too far from my studios up there near Kona, which I got to start using pretty soon. But he's an expert on looking at this entire situation. So, you know, we'll get him in there, and we'll call him back up, and we'll continue. We're going to take phone calls with him next hour, by the way. Those of you who have questions about the ET presence, or you have some of your own stories, check in with us on that. I have long suspected that governments might know more than they're telling us. And, you know, that's a situation that, okay, and we've got him back. So let me pop him back up there. There you go, Michael. I don't know what happened, but I'm glad you're here.
I'm back, yeah. Excellent with the phone.
While you were gone, a couple ETs landed in my studio, and they have admitted that they've been coming here for years. How about that?
Oh, fantastic.
Okay, anyways, we're back talking about the Vatican. And what do you think what do they get out of this if they come forward?
Well, I think for the Vatican itself, there's a lot of pluses in coming forward, because they're the ones that could probably say with some justification that they weren't keeping this secret, or that they weren't the lead agency in keeping this secret, and that they could build a bridge to these extraterrestrials, and that they could establish a kind of a common understanding about the significance of faith and spirituality, and possibly develop a global spiritual outlook. So I think what we're looking at, and this is certainly what Tom Horn and Chris Putnam are saying, is that the Vatican may benefit most by being in the lead of developing a kind of global spirituality that embraces all the religions on the planet in some kind of extraterrestrial-inspired faith. And so that may be the kind of big gain here for the Catholic Church, that not only would they kind of find a new mission, but they could actually build something that would appeal to the entire planet, that would go just beyond Catholics or Christians, but would be something equally relevant for Muslims and Hindus and Buddhists and so forth.
I was going to say, do you think other religions will embrace the announcement?
I think that other religions aren't as well organized as the Catholic Church. They don't have the kind of resources and the centralized authority that the Catholic Church has, which is why the Catholic Church is such an important religious institution. Other religions are kind of much more diversified in terms of religious authority. And so I think that they would kind of tend to follow the lead. If the Catholic Church puts out a compelling case and makes it a kind of ecumenical process or something that is participating.
Yeah, the other ones just might do that. Michael, we'll be right back. Next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Michael Sala. Hey, have you watched our television show yet, Beyond Belief? Simply go to our website, take advantage of 10 days free to watch all the shows. This Friday, Mark Zakri in the Twilight Zone. Make sure you're part of that. But go to our website, click hosts right there at the top of the homepage, and then it opens up and says TV show. So click that as well, fill out the information, and there you are. Back with more with Dr. Michael Sala as we talk about exopolitics on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, Dr. Michael Sala with us. Michael, I want to talk about the various ETs out there, but abductions, why do you think they occur? What's going on there?
Well, I think some extraterrestrials have a need for studying human genetics for their own kind of evolutionary purposes, and maybe they have certain needs within their own kind of biological makeup for human DNA to somehow assist them. And this was something that I believe was a part of these agreements that we were talking about earlier, that they relayed their need to kind of study human genetics, and that the governments or the kind of private sector interests that were involved in that, in those agreements, in those negotiations, thought that, well, in exchange for giving the extraterrestrials the right to be able to do these abductions, or at least condone it, that they would receive assistance from extraterrestrials for some of their technology programs. And there's some really good examples of how this has been happening. Bill Newhouse is a really interesting... he was an electrical engineer, and he was involved in some propulsion technologies, trying to reverse engineer some of the extraterrestrial technology that was found and that was being studied in some of these classified programs. And he says that whenever any of the engineers had a problem in understanding how some of these advanced technologies worked, that an extraterrestrial would walk in, and what he described was a grey extraterrestrial. He called it J-Rod. So clearly the greys were helping elements of the US government to reverse engineer some of their technologies, because in exchange the greys were able to do these abductions for the genetic experimentation.
But people are going, and they're not volunteering. They're being taken against their will. Is there anything? Do you find something wrong with that?
Oh yes, of course. It's a violation of human rights, and certainly that's why it's important to expose this. Because without exposing it, then it can continue on for a long time. But it is worth pointing out, George, that when we're looking at the abduction phenomenon, many people who have been working on this for decades now, they say that the worst experiences people have are not from the abductions themselves by the aliens, by the grey aliens. As invasive as that is, they actually say that what's far worse is the treatment at the hands of what they describe as these military abductions, where these secret agencies that are monitoring the extraterrestrial activities and the extraterrestrial abductions then kind of re-abduct the people who have been taken up into the ET ships, and they subject them to some horrendous treatment and very invasive mind control techniques and really mess people up. And so this seems to be something that is far worse than what is happening in the abductions, because I think the grey extraterrestrials, I think that they essentially just need human genetics for their own purposes, and the military factions or the secret government that are monitoring this are really brutalizing people that are involved in this because they want to find out what exactly the extraterrestrials have been doing, what they're up to, and they're wanting to make sure that the people who are part of or who have been taken up by the extraterrestrials, by the greys, that they don't go out there and start talking too much about it, or at least get too much credibility in what they experienced.
Let's talk about the various types of ETs. What's a type 1?
Well, a type 1 civilization, according to the typology that was developed by this Soviet astronomer, Nikolai Kardashev, to understand how extraterrestrials would evolve, he categorized extraterrestrials on the basis of their being able to utilize energy at different macro levels. So a type 1 for him was extraterrestrials who had learned how to utilize energy at a planetary level. And so we have examples of that. There are many UFO sightings that appear to show these UFOs going into the volcano. I think it's, I'm not sure if I pronounce it correctly, Popocatépetl, somewhere in Mexico, near Mexico City, that the UFOs are going in and seem to be interfering with the potential for that volcano to explode and produce kind of great destruction in that area. So it seems that whatever the ETs are doing, that they're able to work with these planetary level forces like seismic activity, or at least lava flows and magma flows and so forth, and trying to and abate that.
So that's type one.
Correct.
Type two.
Well, type two is examples of extraterrestrial civilizations that have learned how to use energy at a stellar level, and actually can harness the energy of the sun, for example. And so a famous physicist, Dyson, he developed this theory of a Dyson sphere, essentially mm-hmm. that extraterrestrials who are type two civilizations could develop this incredibly large sphere that could trap the energy of the sun and utilize it for whatever purposes they like. And, of course, again, you have many sightings, many of the images that are put up by the SOHO satellites that are monitoring the sun 24 hours a day, that many of those images seem to show what looks like a UFO or something very large, these incredibly large motherships that people say are seen entering and leaving the vicinity of the sun. So that's an example of what would probably be a type 2 civilization that is able to utilize the energy of the sun.
Type 3.
The type 3 civilization, that's a more difficult one to kind of like come up with concrete examples of, but essentially it's a civilization that could use energy from an entire galaxy. So this would be civilizations that are, say, able to work with the energies of the galactic core. Many scientists embrace the idea that within the galactic core is this incredibly massive black hole. And so any civilization that is able to harness the energies of the galactic core would have a deep understanding of black holes and how they work. And so this is how a type 3 civilization would operate.
Type 4.
Well, that's a really fascinating case because the Kardashev scale, and which is used by many physicists, for example, Mikio Kaku, he uses yeah. that same typology. They only go as far as type 3 because they say, well, it's not worth speculating, you know, what goes beyond using, you know, what kind of energies exist beyond the galactic level. But I think we can kind of look at that, especially when we're trying to understand or make sense of extraterrestrial civilizations visiting the Earth, you know, what they've been telling contactees, that some of them seem to fall into this category of a type 4 civilization. And that is a civilization that uses energy at a universal level, that somehow they can tap into this kind of universal sphere of energy that pervades our entire universe, and they can reach a certain level of knowledge or understanding of that. There's a famous case of a contactee from Colombia, Enrico Castillo, and he talks about meeting an extraterrestrial in the Andes, that he was there with there was around another 20 contactees from different parts of the world to receive training, and he says this extraterrestrial walked out who was different to the Pleiadians that had taken him there, that were kind of, the Pleiadians were the typical human-looking extraterrestrials that many contactees describe. That in this case, what Castillo Rincon described was this being that kind of looked more like a Jesus-like figure, that mm-hmm. just kind of emanated this aura, this quality that even the extraterrestrials were in awe of. And he spoke himself, he spoke of himself as having access to like about, I think it was like 33% of universal wisdom. So he's referring to some kind of universal energy field that he was able to tap into, and that even though people around him and the extraterrestrials themselves saw him as being, you know, really exalted, he really kind of said that, well, he can only tap into, you know, something in that order of 33% of universal energy. So for that would be an example of a type 4 being or a civilization. And you've had other people who have been guests on your show, like J.J. Hertak. He talks about these universal brotherhoods of light. I think that they are a good example of a Type 4 civilization, that they don't identify themselves with a particular planet or a particular solar system, that they identify themselves as kind of like an expression of universal energy. So they would speak more in terms of the oneness of all that is, like a kind of unity consciousness. And so they go beyond simple identification with an ethnicity or a planetary civilization or a galactic civilization, but they are more a universal being.
We have heard that some ETs introduce contactees to higher powers. Have you heard that?
Yes, definitely, definitely. That's a good example of what I was just mentioning in terms of Enrique Castillo. He was taken to this remote location in the Andes. Another good example of that is George Adamski. I mean, he also was, when he was taken up on the ships, he says that he saw these Venusians up there. These were the beings that were taking him up on the ships, and he described his encounters with them. A very famous one with Orthon was witnessed by six other people. But he says that when he was taken up on the ships, that he was able to meet with someone that had this kind of universal wisdom, and he was called a master of wisdom. And George Adamski kind of described it as this incredible experience. And similarly, you had Howard Menger going through something very similar to that, meeting again this being that the extraterrestrials themselves kind of deferred to. So I think what you have is an example here of these Type 4 civilizations who are helping, say, Type 1 or Type 2 extraterrestrial civilizations, who in turn are helping us, who are, you know, we're really a Type 0 civilization, because we haven't yet learned how to use the levels of a planet's energies to reach Type 1. So I think what you have is different, more evolved civilizations helping less evolved to kind of move forward, because there is this kind of great chain of universal being, I think, that is happening here.
Between years 1 and 4, in terms of the types, how many years do you think?
Well, that's a difficult
100
one.
100 years? I know it. It's tough.
Yes, that's a difficult one to estimate. But definitely, Kardashev and Kaku have speculated about that, and I think it's in that order of 100 to 200 years to go from one type to another type.
Which is nothing in space-time.
Well, that's right. Yes, you could. If you learned how to kind of move through space-time, then that's something that could happen really, really quickly. But I think in terms of our civilization, we do have this element, whatever we want to call it, the secret government, the breakaway civilization that has this incredibly advanced technology, and I think that they probably have attained that level of a Type 1 civilization. And of course, the rest of humanity, the seven, I think close to 7 billion of us, we're still at, about 0.7, according to the Kardashev scale. But this breakaway civilization is reached type one. And so obviously that would be a really important way for the rest of us to evolve, if the secrets and the information that the secret government has kind of kept from the world's populations were to become available, then our evolution would speed up really quickly. So rather than having to wait whatever it is, 30 to 50 years to become a Type 1 civilization, we could practically do it overnight if the secret government basically came forward and said, well, this is what we know, and sorry for having kept this from you for so long, but now's the time for you to kind of be educated and welcome to the galactic community.
Tell me about Exo News. What's that?
Well, that's a really exciting new project, George, that I've become involved with. One of the things that I'm very familiar with is that the need to reach to the current generation, the kind of YouTube generation, the generation who embrace the iPhone, the iPads, the iPods, and so forth. And how do you reach people that are kind of really integrated with this kind of technological communications revolution that we are in the midst of, whose lives move really, really quickly, and they don't have time to listen to kind of conference presentations and so forth, that that they need things really quick. And so I came up with the idea of coming up with a really condensed way to present information in an attractive format that's within that kind of 3 to 4 minute kind of window that the modern attention span is with the YouTube generation. That seems to be as much time as people want to pay to any one particular issue. And then, of course, if they're more interested, then they can dive deeper into it. But I think for many people, they could be reached if information is presented in a really concise formula that's visually attractive with the right music and the kind of visuals coming in and out, that could really open up millions of people that are part of the YouTube generation. And so that's certainly what EXO News is all about. It's really trying to appeal to those people that need information in a really quick, succinct formula.
Well, it's fascinating how many people are getting their information that way these days.
Well, that's right. Yeah, newspapers are dying. I mean, all around the country, newspapers are shutting down. Those newspapers that are surviving are moving to blogs. But I think what we're witnessing now, even more importantly, is the growth in the YouTube, that more and more people are watching the YouTube as their primary source of entertainment and even information. And so that's really important, because once people start to shift to YouTube for getting information, that means that even cable news networks are going to be struggling, because YouTube is inherently democratic. It means that anyone can put their material up on YouTube. And if it becomes popular, it goes viral, and as many as a billion people. I think that popular song by the Korean musician there, Gangnam Style, that was over a billion views. I mean,
yeah, huge.
Yeah, so anyone can do that. So there are a lot of advantages in YouTube becoming so popular, and certainly I think for those of us involved in this field, working to try and promote disclosure, trying to promote awareness of the extraterrestrial presence, we really have to address this YouTube generation. We really need to get our message to them in a way that appeals, and we have to embrace, you know, that kind of 3-4 minute time window we have, rather than criticize it, because I think, you know, too many people who have been researching this field for many, many years would kind of like, you know, be shocked at the idea that, you know, somehow they've got to present their information in a kind of 3 to 4 minute window to appeal to people, that they will think, well, you know, that's silly, and, you know, if someone's not going to listen to my 1 hour lecture, then they're not worth it. But I think people are worth it, and it's like, you know, you need to kind of relay information in a formula that is kind of comfortable for people, and if they want to learn more, then they can go listen to the 1 hour lecture.
Well, I think it's all coming down that way, Michael. We're going to take some phone calls with you in just a moment, final hour here indeed. But overall, you think that this is a very safe situation with these ETs, don't you?
Well, I wouldn't say it's safe. I mean, I think that there are that we have passed through some incredibly dangerous times, and that the reason we passed through those dangerous times were not because of enlightened leadership, but more because we had a lot of friends from the galaxy kind of watching over us and helping us through these dangerous moments, when we could have so easily have, gone up in a nuclear war.
Yeah, that's true. Michael, we'll come back for more and calls next on Coast to Coast AM.